Photography and Culture, next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Alex Harris of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University is here to discuss his new book about northern New Mexico. Before that, William Brumfield of Tulane University discusses his photography of architecture in the former Soviet Union.
Well, the photography is of a specific area, that is architecture. I began photographing as a graduate student when I was over there working on a dissertation in Russian literature and history. But it seemed to me that the built environment had so much to say about the mental environment that I saw in literature and also about the history that I had studied, that that too was worthy of being recorded.
William Brumfield teaches at Tulane University. In just a moment, he'll be here to talk about photography and architecture in the former Soviet Union. Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities, with additional support from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation, the Neutrogena Corporation, the Daniel and Joanna S. Rose Fund Incorporated, and Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. William Brumfield teaches at Tulane University and writes about Russian history and architecture. He says that architecture provides a window on the social and intellectual forces that helped to shape modern Russia, from the moisture-laden ambience of St. Petersburg to Moscow's polychromatic blare. An exhibit of Brumfield's photographs, entitled The Russian Art of Building in Wood, recently appeared at the National Humanities Center and at Founders Hall of the Nation's Bank Corporate Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. Brumfield notes that while political ideology is tangible in what he calls Russia's built environment, the architecture of Russia's churches, both urban and rural, perhaps best captures the spirit and imagination of the Russian people. William Brumfield.
Absolutely. And here, of course, we're talking not only about Petersburg, or not even primarily about Petersburg, but about the rest of Russia. I think there is an extraordinary accomplishment in the design and the painting of Russian churches with their frescoes and icons. This is a culture that derives from Byzantium. It is spoken and directed to some of the deepest spiritual needs in Russian history. And yet it is an area that has been largely neglected in the West. In fact, church architecture is virtually the only architecture existing in Russia before the 18th century. Most of the other buildings, including many of the churches for that matter, were built of wood, and of course time and the disasters have erased them. But the churches remain, and each of them as you go into one is a microcosm of what the medieval Russian thought of his place or her place in the world. All of these saints and religious images. And this is something that deserves far more study than we have been able to give to it. That's why I try to document it.
Isn't it a remarkable thing that under the weight of Soviet politics, a lot of that you've told me has disappeared, but it persists. It's there nonetheless.
Absolutely, and I think it's being revived with some rather curious and paradoxical conflicts. As the churches are returned to the church, some museum curators who said, we preserved these buildings from destruction, are now saying, you are threatening them with a different type of destruction by returning them to active use. Of course, these problems can be resolved, and I think they are being resolved, but now, as in so many other areas, the sense of preservation and use in religious architecture have become questions that speak to the very identity of Russians.
Tell me about your photography itself, Bill Brumfield. You've traveled many times to the Soviet Union. Lately in your travels, you have been allowed a remarkable degree of freedom. What is it that you do as a photographer, other than simply point a camera at a church and take a picture? What are you looking for, really?
Well, I'm trying to be as comprehensive as possible because I find it all fascinating. Back in the late 70s and early 80s, I did so much photography that I attracted a great deal of rather unwanted attention.
What, you mean from the politicians?
Well, from the guardians of order,
uh-huh.
Who at certain points, when you could always plot them in terms of the political problems between Soviet Union and the West, for example, after the invasion of Afghanistan when I was there in 1980.
You became a bad guy of some sort.
Absolutely, and was followed and in some ways harassed, although my cameras were never destroyed and my film was never confiscated. There was a sort of psychological warfare that reached its peak in, at certain points, particularly in 1984, the time of the evil empire, so-called, and the downing of the Korean airliner, the frequent changeover in the Soviet leadership, all led to a certain jittery atmosphere that certainly impacted on my own work.
Well, and back to the photography, did that make it easier or more difficult for you as it were, capture the essence of this Russian architecture? What? Give me a sense of that interplay again.
Well, I think it went. The photography went on in spite of all of this. I did have friends there who calmed me down and said that you can take a picture of this, you can take a picture of that. Even when some thug goes and stands in front of the monument while you're trying to take it, don't worry, this too will pass.
And this was not accidental.
No, absolutely not. At the worst phases, I don't want to exaggerate it, but there was this sense that every step you took was being watched, and perhaps in some cases that might have been reassuring if I had looked at it from a different perspective. But nonetheless, the work was there. The appeal of the architecture never waned, and the sense that this must be recorded and interpreted, and I, as a photographer, have to know where to go. That's the first thing. That's where the scholarship comes in. What is worth photographing and why?
In other words, your knowledge of Russian history, Russian literature, to take you to the places that are... I take it that you feel it's all worth preserving, but within that category, you got to make choices.
Well, it's all worth studying. The preservation issue is for them to decide, not for me. But it's certainly worth studying and recording and documenting, whether it's vernacular architecture of modest houses or great grandiose buildings of imperial architecture. It's there as a record of a country's destiny. And for me to capture that and at the same time convey what I felt emotionally about the beauty of these monuments is really what photography meant.
Give me a very concrete example, Bill Brumfield. Do you have in all of the thousands of photographs that you took of Russian architecture and locales, is there a favorite kind of example that jumps to mind? And what I'm urging you to do here is very briefly paint us a picture. Give me a palpable sense of what you saw and took pictures of.
Well, I think perhaps the building that most speaks to me of both the beauty and the tragedy of the Russian experience is a small church on the outskirts of Novgorod.
To locate that for me on the Russian terrain?
Novgorod is in the northwest part of Russia. It's just to the east of Estonia. Let's put it that way. It's to the southwest of Petersburg. And there is a small church there that was built in the latter part of the 12th century, called the Church of the Transfiguration of the Savior on the Neretva River. And I had known that it had been preserved, and it had a remarkable set of medieval frescoes. It had not been overpainted. And then during the Second World War, it had been hit by an artillery shell. But they had managed to rebuild it. And I went out there one cold, sunny November morning, hired a boat, or grizzled fisherman took me out there and dropped me off. And I walked around, and it seemed to me that this seemingly modest structure was so perfectly formed and embodied so clearly not only structural logic, but the world of faith and belief, merging into a sense of divinity. We don't know the architects. We don't know the painters. It wasn't important for them. What they had created was a representation of the purpose of life and of the relation between the humans and the divinity. And that all seemed to be summed up in that little monument that had been barbarously and thoughtlessly destroyed and now once again here reshaped. And I think I caught that. It's been published in a number of my articles, and you might say, well, it's simply a reconstruction. I think that somehow it managed to recover the life of that building. That's why I say that it embodies the tragedy as well as the deep spiritual beauty of Russian architecture at its best.
Bill, are you optimistic about the cultural cross currents that flow back and forth between the United States and what used to be the Soviet Union? Let's move toward a conclusion. Give me a quick answer to that.
Well, I have to be optimistic, and I am optimistic, although certainly during my recent trip there this past fall, I saw many problems. In fact, the car that I was using to go out in the provinces brought me very directly face-to-face with those problems. How do you replace a broken wheel bearing in a Russian garage? So I think there are immediate and sometimes perhaps explosive problems that have to be dealt with. But I certainly have not and will not lose my faith in that culture's identity and ability to persevere.
Mm-hmm. Bill Brumfield, I want to thank you for this lively and fascinating account of your recent travels in the what used to be the Soviet Union. Let me mention your books here, The Origins of Modernism and Russian Architecture, that was published by California in 1991, and the most recent one we can look for here in the spring of 1993. It's called A History of Russian Architecture. It's available from Cambridge University Press. Bill Brumfield, you are a professor of Slavic studies at Tulane. Thank you for coming by to talk on Soundings. I wish you well in your work.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
This is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Photography and culture. Join me now for a conversation with Alex Harris of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. We'll talk about his new book, Red, White, Blue, and God Bless You, a photo documentary of the people and landscapes of northern New Mexico.
There's a phrase that my friend who's a writer, William Dubuis, and I came up with in thinking about the Ancianos, and called intactness. There's something about the lives of these people, the way that they keep their farms and their homes intact, that's a kind of a devotion to home that I felt could be captured in a photograph and was worthy of preserving.
Documentary photographer Alex Harris. His latest book is Red, White, Blue, and God Bless You. In a departure from Harris's earlier black and white photography, Red, White, Blue, and God Bless You incorporates color photography and commentary. It's a book that explores the people, landscape, and culture of northern New Mexico's mountain villages. Ranging from interiors to yards and porches, houses and cars, Alex Harris examines the presence of a people amidst the passage of time, and as part of both domestic and natural environments. I asked Alex Harris to explain the title of his new book.
Wayne, the title was an inscription I photographed on the wall of a home of a man named Amadeo Sandoval in a small village in northern New Mexico. When I made the picture, I saw that phrase really embodied so much of what had drawn me to photograph many, many homes over a number of years in northern New Mexico. It spoke to religion as part of everyday life. It spoke to a kind of a devotion to home, which drew me into those homes both as a human being and as a photographer, and drew me to the people.
What kind of a challenge do you face, Alex, when you compose a picture as a documentary photographer and you are after, to put it crudely, the idea of a human devotion to a place or a location, a home, and there are no people in the pictures? Is that a paradox for you?
It might appear to be a kind of a paradox. You know, I'd photographed for years in black and white as a kind of a traditional portrait photographer with a person as the key part of the image. And at a certain point when I began to work in color, because of technical limitations, I wasn't able to photograph people in the same way. I began to notice that the homes themselves evoked so much of not just that particular moment that you get when you photograph an individual, but a whole life, a whole history of a person, of a family, and even of a culture.
What do you mean by the interchangeability of what's in the foreground and what's in the background of your pictures?
For years, I had been so wrapped up in the making of portraits in a traditional sense, where I'm talking to an individual, I'm hoping to evoke something about that person's life. That person is in the foreground of the picture, and the background is there in my in a kind of a subconscious way for me, but I wasn't paying attention to it in the way that I had to pay attention to my so-called subject. Later, as I began to photograph in color, the background, what had been the backgrounds of my black and white pictures, came into the foreground, and I realized that there was a history there too, and there was a kind of a possibility for stories there.
Well, speaking of history, is time your ally or is time your enemy? I mean, it works both ways for you, I take it.
Time and the effects of time, or I think the subjects of these, is the subject of these photographs. It's an enemy in the sense that the things, so many of the things that I photographed are quickly passing. So many of the homes and buildings and so much of the landscape is being altered in northern New Mexico. On the other hand, it's a lived life and the physical manifestation of that lived life, the time that people have put into their homes and their families that really makes the pictures.
It's difficult for us here. We don't have the benefit of the video. We're on the radio, but you know, in many of these pictures in your book, Alex, we're looking at centuries through modern windows, and there may seem to be an initial kind of jarring effect there, a sort of a paradox, and yet the pictures come through beautifully well. I mean, you're looking at these incredible vistas and landscapes through windows of brand new, relatively speaking, brand new cars. Were you having fun with this there? Is this a serious object of your photography? What?
I don't know if I'd use the word serious. I was having fun. In fact, I had so much fun for most of this project that I really didn't want it to end. Maybe that's why it took me 10 years to complete this. But I had an idea at a certain point on photographing in northern New Mexico that I could make a portrait of a people without having any people in the pictures. And so what I wanted to do was photograph the spaces that people had control over in some way. The older people had control over the interior of the rooms. The women decorated the homes and the rooms. The older men dealt with the landscape and transformed the landscape. The younger people, the only space that they really controlled was their automobiles, the decoration of their automobiles. And I began to photograph the interiors of those automobiles. And at a certain point, I realized that I could also not only photograph the interiors, but photograph the landscape, the things that people saw, the landscape they drove through every day, through the windows, and show the juxtaposition that the people themselves might see as they move through their lives.
These youngsters, they're not all teenagers, but they're relatively speaking, again, younger people. Tell me, Alex Harris, about a man named Sena, who is, what, your counterpart, your rival, your forerunner, something of a hero to you, I take it. This is a Mexican-American man who took some pictures in northern New Mexico, and how do they play in your book?
As I began to photograph with a large camera in northern New Mexico, I people started to call me Sena, and finally I asked, well,
what to make of that.
Who was this Sena? And and I was told that Eugenio Sena was a photographer by profession. He was from northern New Mexico, from a little village above Peñasco, and he for years had made a living by setting up his view camera, much like mine, at the annual fiestas in Peñasco and some of the other villages, and he sold pictures to people. And I began to notice those pictures, and what he had captured in those pictures was so much what I had hoped to capture in mine. Here was a trusted neighbor and friend, part of a culture, accepted. The people he photographed looked back at him with looks that went beyond anything I had seen, say, in the photographs that the Farm Security Administration photographers who photographed in northern New Mexico in the 40s, 30s and 40s had been able to do.
Uh-huh.
So I really hoped that my pictures might in some way accomplish what Eugenio Sena had already done in his own way.
Do you feel fully accepted by the people of northern New Mexico? Are they comfortable with you and you with them as you take your cameras into their homes and onto their yards and look out from their automobiles?
Wayne, I've lived in northern New Mexico for over 20 years now, and I'm a vecino, or a neighbor, in the village that I've lived in most of that time. But in another way, I'm always going to be an outsider from there. I am an Anglo. I'm from another world. And I think there are advantages to being, as a photographer, to being both, because as an outsider, it's possible that I might see things that people in the culture might say take for granted.
Let's pause on a couple of particulars, Alex Harris. We're talking about your book, Red, White, and Blue, and God Bless You. It's a portrait of northern New Mexico. This is the family of Bielquin Pacheco. Tell me what's going on in that picture. Paint me a picture here.
I had photographed Bielquin for a number of years in northern New Mexico, and when I began to photograph in color, I asked him if he wouldn't pose for me in his bedroom. And Bielquin had recently carved a cross for his mother's grave that he decided to keep as a kind of a recuerdo, or a way to remember her. And I asked him to hold that cross and sit on a yellow chair that he'd painted in his bedroom. And I made his portrait much in the way I'd photographed in black and white for many years.
And yet here in your book, we do not have people in this picture.
In the book, there's a photograph. The photograph shows the cross that Bielquin had carved that day on the yellow chair. And in the background is all the objects that he had made or touched or used over the years. You see his bed. You see a yellow slicker. You see an old stove with some tools nearby. What happened was I made Bielquin's portrait. He had to go outside for a minute to chase some animals outside. And as he left the room, he put the cross on the yellow chair. And it was a kind of a moment where I saw the possibilities for the narrative possibilities in a photograph that I'd never seen before.
It just sort of composed itself.
Well, when Bielquin was there sitting on the chair, the photograph was about him at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
When he left and he put the cross on the chair, the photograph was about him. It was about his entire life. It was about his mother, his family, his culture. The photograph really came alive and told a much richer story for me.
What does it mean to be a humanist and photographer, or a humanist in photography?
For me, it means paying attention to the ways in which humankind has affected the landscape, both the physical landscape and the cultural landscape. It's something that the camera is uniquely able to capture, and photography in itself doesn't interest me. It's not the technical possibilities of the medium or the artistic possibilities of the medium so much as the medium's ability to capture the way we live on this planet.
Are you looking for yourself, or are you looking for other people and things when you point this camera?
One of the great things about being engaged in this kind of documentary work is you can put yourself out of the picture and really focus on the lives and concerns of other people. Of course, on some level, we're all interested in telling a particular kind of story, our own story, and we look for those things unconsciously. But I think what I've loved about this work over the years is the way that it's drawn me into other lives, rather than separating me from the world, connected me to the world in a real way.
And other places. I mean, that's inescapable in these pictures.
Place is an important word in this conversation. It seems natural for us to think of the novelist as a person for whom place is so important. So many novelists have a life's work that's built around place. Photographers, I think, all too often are thought of as people who wander around and take pictures of exotic and fantastic
right.
things. For me, place has been a key thing, and I think in northern New Mexico I've found my place, a place where I might live both a life and where I might photograph over a lifetime.
You use the word grounded. You say for the first time you found your place on the planet. In northern New Mexico. Alex Harris, here's a final question for you. Again, we're talking about your book, Red, White, and Blue, and God Bless You. Have you got a favorite picture here? I want you to be drastically economical in your answer and tell me about that.
In photographing the home of Amadeo Sandoval, I went back to that home. I photographed it in 1984. I went back in 1985. Seeing the transformation in that home, the first series of pictures in 84 when his wife had just died, showed a lived life of two people together in a home. A year later, when I went back, the house had been totally transformed. It was no longer a a joyful place. It really showed a man's desperate attempt to come to terms with the loss of his wife. And I think rather than talk about one picture, I talk about the pairing of photographs in this book, the before and after pictures of Amadeo Sandoval's, as again dealing with showing the narrative possibilities in photography, mm-hmm. how you can tell a story that really goes beyond anything you could say about that man's life, simply by showing the same room at the same angle over a year's period of time.
Well, Alex, again, I want to congratulate you on this wonderful collection. It's called Red, White, and Blue, and God Bless You, published by the University of New Mexico Press. You are a lucky guy. You divide your time between Duke University at the Center for Documentary Studies and Northern New Mexico. Congratulations on your book. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Wayne.
This is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In a moment, I'll tell you where to write if you'd like a cassette tape of this week's show. My guests were William Brumfield of Tulane University and Alex Harris of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. Send $5 for a cassette tape of this program or $2 for a Soundings catalog. Write to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Ask for program number 653. That's number 653, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, the zip code 27709. When you write, please mention the call letters of this radio station. The National Humanities Center welcomes your comments. Next week, Ideology and American Education. Gerald Graff of the University of Chicago will be here to talk about his new book, Beyond the Culture Wars. David Bromwich of Yale University will also be here to discuss his new book, Politics by Other Means. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities, with additional funding from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation, the Neutrogena Corporation, the Daniel and Joanna S. Rose Fund Incorporated, and Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Until next week at this time on this radio station, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Photography and Culture, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. William Brumfield of Tulane University will be here to discuss his work as a photographer and historian of architecture in the former Soviet Union. You'll also hear from Alex Harris of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. We'll talk about his new book, A Photo Documentary of the People and Landscapes of Northern New Mexico. Photography and Culture, some answers and insights from the National Humanities Center this week on Soundings.